ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
यामिदं विश्वं यत्किञ्चिज्जगत् जगत्यं जगत् तेन त्यक्तेन भुञ्जिता मा कृता कस्य स्विध्यनम्।
Within this universe, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, in his Supersoul feature, is present everywhere. Wherever there are animate or inanimate beings, therefore, one should accept only that which is allotted to him. One should not desire to infringe upon the property of others. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Having described the situation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead as transcendental, Swayambhuva Manu, for the instruction of the sons and grandsons in his dynasty, is now describing all the property of the universe as belonging to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Manu's instructions are not only for his own sons and grandsons, but for all of human society. The word man, or in Sanskrit, manushya, has been derived from the name Manu. For all the members of human society are descendants of the original Manu. Manu is also mentioned in Bhagavad Gita. Imam vibhashvate yogam bruktavam aham avyayam vivashvan manave praha manur ikshvakave bravit. I instructed this imperishable science of yoga to the sun god Vivashvan, and Vivaswan instructed it to Manu, the father of mankind, and Manu in turn instructed it to Ikshvaku. Swayambhuva Manu and Vaibhasvatu Manu have similar duties. Vaibhasvatu Manu was born of the sun god Vivaswan, and his son was Ikshvaku, the king of the earth. Since Manu is understood to be the original father of humanity, human society should follow his instructions. Swayambhuva Manu instructs that whatever exists not only in the spiritual world, but even within this material world, is the property of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is present everywhere as the superconsciousness. As confirmed in Bhagavad Gita, Kshetra Gyam Chapimam Vidhi Sarva Kshetre Trubharata. In every field, in other words, in every body, the Supreme Lord is existing as the Super Soul. The individual soul is given a body in which to live and act according to the instructions of the Supreme Person. And therefore, the Supreme Person also exists within every body. We should not think that we are independent. Rather, we should understand that we are allotted a certain portion of the total property of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This understanding will lead to perfect communism. Communists think in terms of their own nations, but the spiritual communism instructed here is not only nationwide, but universal. Nothing belongs to any nation or any individual person. Everything belongs to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That is the beginning of this verse and the meaning of this verse. Atmavasyamidam vishvam, whatever exists within this universe is the property of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The modern communistic theory and also the idea of the United Nations can be reformed, indeed rectified, by the understanding that everything belongs to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The Lord is not a creation of our intelligence. Rather, he has created us. Atmavasyamidam vishvam, ishavasyamidam sarvam. This universal communism can solve all the problems of the world. One should learn from the Vedic literature that one's body is also not the property of the individual soul, but is the given to the individual soul according to his karma. Karmana deva netrena jantur deho papataye. The 8,400,000 different bodily forms are machines given to the individual soul This is confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita. Ishvara sarva bhutanam hridayeshe arjuna tishtati brahmayan sarva bhutani yantrarudane mayaya. The Supreme Lord is situated in everyone's heart, O Arjuna, and is directing the wanderings of all living entities who are seated as on a machine made of the material nature. The Lord, as the Supersoul, sits in everyone's heart and observes the various desires of the individual soul. The Lord is so merciful that he gives the living entity the opportunity to enjoy varieties of desires in suitable bodies, which are nothing but machines, yantra rudhani mayaya. These machines are manufactured by the material ingredients of the external energy, and thus the living entity enjoys or suffers according to his desires. This opportunity is given by the Supersoul. Everything belongs to the Supreme, and therefore one should not usurp another's property. We have a tendency to manufacture many things, especially nowadays we are building skyscrapers and developing other material facilities. We should know, however, that the ingredients of the skyscrapers and machines cannot be manufactured by anyone but the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The whole world is nothing but a combination of the five material elements. Tejo varimridam yata vinamaya. A skyscraper is a transformation of earth, water, and fire. Earth and water are combined and burnt into bricks by fire. And a skyscraper is essentially a tall construction of bricks. Although the bricks may be manufactured by man, the ingredients of the bricks are not. Of course, man as a manufacturer may accept a salary from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That is stated here. Tena tyaktena bhunjita. One may construct a big skyscraper, but neither the constructor, the merchant, nor the worker can claim proprietorship. Proprietorship belongs to the person who has spent for the building. The Supreme Personality of Godhead has manufactured water, earth, air, fire, and sky. And one can use these and take a salary, tena tyaktena bhunjita. However, one cannot claim proprietorship. This is perfect communism. Our tendency to construct great buildings should be used only for the constructing of large and valuable temples in which to install the deity of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Then our desire for construction will be fulfilled. Since all property belongs to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, everything should be offered to the Lord, and we should take only prasad. We should not fight among ourselves to take more than what we need. As Narada said to Maharaj Yudhisthira, Yavad Brieta Jataram Tavat Svatvam Hidehinam Adikaram Yabhiman Bhibanyeta Susteno Dandamarhati. One may claim proprietorship to as much wealth as required to maintain body and soul together. But one who desires proprietorship over more than that must be considered a thief, and he deserves to be punished by the laws of nature. Of course, we need to be maintained in eating, sleeping, defending, and mating. Ahara nidrabhaya maituna. But since the Supreme Lord, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, has provided these necessities of life for the birds and the bees, why not for mankind? There is no need for economic development. Everything is provided. Therefore, one should understand that everything belongs to Krishna, and with this idea, one may take prasad. However, if one interferes with the allotments of others, he is a thief. We should not accept more than we actually need. Therefore, if by chance we get an abundance of money, we should always consider that it belongs to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In Krishna consciousness, we are getting sufficient money. But we should never think that the money belongs to us. It belongs to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and we should be equally distributed to the workers and the devotees. No devotee should claim that any money or property belongs to him. If one thinks that any portion of property of this huge universe belongs to anyone, he is to be considered a thief and is punishable by the laws of nature. Daivi heshu gunamai mama maya duratyaya. No one can surpass the vigilance of material nature or hide his intentions from material nature. If human society unlawfully claims that the property of the universe, even partially wholly, belongs to mankind, all of human society will be cursed as a society of thieves and will be punished by the laws of nature. Translation. Within this universe, the Supreme Personality of Godhead in his supersoul feature is present everywhere. Wherever there are animate or inanimate beings, therefore one should accept only that which is allotted to him. One should not desire to infringe upon the property of others. Om Agyan Timirandasya Gyananjana Chalakaya Chakshurun Militam Jena Tasmai Sri Gurubhyo Namaha. The only means of peace to be established within our life and within our society is to understand this most basic principle of religion. Tena tyaktena bhunjita. That everything is the property of God, and therefore we only have the right to accept what is provided and allotted for by the laws of God. Krishna also explains in the Gita, Bhoktaram yagyatapasam sarva loka maheshwaram suhridam sarva bhutanam gyatvamam shanti mrichchati. This is the peace formula. That one who understands how Krishna is the supreme proprietor of everything that exists and knows that everything is meant for his enjoyment and trusts with faith that Krishna is our friend, only such a person can achieve peace. You see, unless we understand that Krishna is our friend, unless we have faith and trust in the supremacy of God, then it will not be possible for us to utilize everything for his enjoyment. We see in the lives of great asuras, such as Hiranyakashipu, Kamsa, they knew that Krishna was the Supreme Personality of Godhead. They knew that he was the Supreme God. It is not that they were in ignorance, they were in knowledge. They knew that he was the proprietor of everything. They knew that everything was meant for his enjoyment. But they did not know that he is the friend of all living beings. They considered Krishna or Narayan to be their enemy. Therefore, they wanted to claim proprietorship and compete with their enemy or Vishnu. Just like there is the story of how Hiranyaksha, he was the younger brother of Hiranyakashipu. In order to please his brother, he wandered throughout the entire universe with his formidable club, conquering the demigods, conquering all the planets. He even went to the abode of Varuna and challenged that you either give me your property or fight with me. No one could even stand before him in battle. But then it was told by Hiranyaksha that the Supreme Lord Vishnu had incarnated in the wonderful form of a boar, and that if he really wanted a good fight, he should fight with Vishnu. So, of course, we know the story. There was a great battle between Hiranyaksha and the Supreme Lord, Sri Varaha Dev. And in the end, Varahadev slayed this mighty asura. And the family members were weeping, they were crying in great distress that their beloved son and brother was dead. In fact, Diti, the mother of both Hiranyakashipu and Hiranyaksha, she was weeping in great distress. Even though she knew that her sons were very unrighteous demons, simply because of her motherly affection, she could not bear the separation. So Hiranyakashipu, he vowed to avenge the death of his brother. He vowed that our enemy is Vishnu, and therefore Vishnu must be killed, and therefore we must conquer and usurp everything that is his, and we must take the position of God. Suradam sarvabhutanam. Krishna says, if you simply understand that he is your friend, you will find peace. Hiranyakashipu understood everything except that Krishna was his friend. He considered him his enemy. And therefore, he made a very, very strategic plan. He decided that let us kill all the Brahmins. Let us destroy their sacrifice. If we do like this, Vishnu, who is dependent on their oblations, he will die. Huh? Because in sacrifice, you know, the Brahmins, they offer oblations to the devatas as well as to Vishnu. And they felt that if Vishnu does not get his oblations, he will die. And this is the way we will kill our enemy, indirectly. So, of course, they were causing great havoc. And Hiranyakashipu, by his mighty strength, he conquered the entire universe. But how intolerable it was that the worst and greatest, the only enemy in Hiranyakashipu's life, was worshipped by his favorite son, Prahlad. Hiranyakashipu was demanding all demigods and all Brahmins and all living beings to worship him as the supreme proprietor of the universe. And he was so powerful, he was so extravagant in his success, that even great sages like Narada Muni became his humble, obedient servant. What to speak of anybody else? There was nobody that would not bow down to his command except one person, his own favorite son, Prahlad. His own favorite son, Prahlad, was constantly chanting the name of Narayan. He was constantly thinking of Sri Krishna's beautiful form, his beautiful pastimes. He was always crying out in love for Krishna. And whenever his father would inquire from him of what he was thinking or what the best part of his education was, Prahlad would always tell his father to give up his false ego and surrender to Krishna. It was too much for Hiranyakashipu to tolerate. When you hate somebody, when you are envious of somebody, there is nothing that disturbs your mind than seeing the person you are envious of glorified. Even within our own life, we can feel this. Our envy is not very much. We're a little envious of someone. And when we hear that person glorified, it's very, very difficult to tolerate. We want to either assassinate that person's character or minimize them or think that the person who's glorifying him is some kind of a uninformed fool. Huh? In this way, it's very difficult to tolerate. In fact, it creates a burning sensation within the core of our heart, does it not? When we hear a person we are envious of glorified. Just like Shishupal, he was so envious of Krishna. He was given a benediction because Krishna was born to kill Shishupal. He was given a benediction that you can blaspheme Krishna up to 100 times, but beyond 100 times, Krishna said, I will have to kill you. And when he saw that Krishna was being glorified in such a way, the Agra Puja of the Rajasuya sacrifice of Maharaj Yudhisthira, Krishna was, this puja is given for the most respected and honored man in the entire world. And this honor was being given to Krishna. Such a glorification. Shishupal could not tolerate. He could not contain himself. He just went wild and just started blaspheming as if he had 100,000 mouths. Just blasphemies were coming out. And he lost all of his good memory and all of his common sense. And he went beyond the 100 mark. And then Krishna very calmly took his Sudarshan chakra and severed his head. So when you are envious of someone, if that person is glorified, it's very painful to the heart. And the worst type of glorification is if someone that you love glorifies that person. If just a stranger glorifies the person, it's intolerable, but somehow or other you can contain yourself. Huh? But if someone that you love is glorifying that person, someone that you're attached to is glorifying that person, someone that you want to adore you is glorifying him instead, my God, it's like a death blow to the false ego. Huh? It's such a threat. So imagine Hiranyakashipu's condition of consciousness. Of all his sons, he wanted Prahlad to be the next king. He was his favorite son. He was, of all the sons, he was the most virtuous and the most intelligent, and he possessed the most munificent qualities. And Hiranyakashipu was so proud of his son. But his son was 24 hours a day chanting the glories of his enemy. Suhridam sarvabhutanam. So in order to properly practice devotional service, you have to have faith that Krishna is your ever well-wishing friend. Otherwise, even if you know he's the proprietor of everything, and even if you know everything is meant for his enjoyment, you will not trust giving anything to him. Right? The spiritual master is the representative of Krishna. That is why Srila Prabhupada, he would always sign his letters, your ever well-wisher. What does this mean? Unless we understand this principle, we cannot properly practice our devotional life. Unless we have this faith, unless we have this trust that Krishna, as well as the spiritual master, his representative, they are our ever well-wishers. That means whatever we surrender to them, we should have complete faith that it is to our best interest. Whatever they ask us to do, they are never trying to cheat us. They are never trying to exploit us. But they are our best friends trying to help us, give us the greatest of all benedictions. We must have that faith. Otherwise, when the test comes, we will fail. The test is when we have to surrender. And at that point of surrender, there must be trust. There must be faith that, yes, this person is my ever well-wisher. Srila Prabhupada used to tell us, many times he told us, that this is the world of the cheaters and the cheated. Everyone is cheating each other. He even gave us an example. The example he gave was in India. He said that in the villages, sometimes there is the idea that if I can only marry my daughter to a sadhu, then we will get great benediction of God within our family. So when the sadhus beg door to door. They take their daughter and they have the daughter take very good care of the sadhu and trick the sadhu into becoming attracted, and then the sadhu marries the daughter and they cheat the sadhu in this way. They cheat him from his renunciation. But what happens is unscrupulous, low class, the lowest of mankind, they know that, here's a wealthy family and they want to marry their daughter to a sadhu. So they disguise themselves as a sadhu and they came to the home and the daughter takes very good care and he says, yes, I will give all benedictions. I will marry her. I will become the heir of your property. Very nice. You are the recipient of God's mercy. But actually they're getting nothing of God's mercy. They're simply getting a low-class criminal as a son-in-law. This is called the cheaters and the cheated. You want to cheat, but there are cheaters who will cheat you. And ultimately, Krishna says that he is the greatest cheater. He cheats everyone of everything in due course of time. You cannot cheat Krishna. But his cheating is out of love. He is not cheating us. He is actually our best friend. So this is the world of the cheaters and the cheated, and Prabhupada used to tell us that if you want to make proper spiritual advancement, you simply have to have faith in one thing, that your guru has not come to cheat you. Everyone else is cheating you, but your guru is not cheating you. He is your friend and he is giving to you only. He is only concerned with your interest. The guru is never exploiting you. The guru is your best well-wishing friend. Lord Kapila Dev explains to Devahuti that there's only one friend, and that is Krishna. There is no one else except Krishna who can be your friend. Because a friend in need is a friend indeed. And when are you most in need? At the time of death. There are so many incidents in the Shastra, the story of Gajendra. He had so many friends, but when he was in need, at the time when he was about to be killed, no one could help him. In fact, at the time of death, none of your family members, none of your social acquaintances, none of your political lords within society, nobody can help you. Only the name of Krishna can help you. Therefore, Krishna is our only friend. And one who is here as his servant, one who is his intimate associate, one who is fulfilling his desire, one who is on his mission, that person is equally our friend to Krishna. And therefore, the only friend is a God-conscious representative of the Lord. And if we do not have this faith, there's no question of really being able to surrender. Faith is the most important part of our spiritual life. Faith that the guru is not coming to cheat you. Faith that Krishna is our friend and here is his representative on earth. If we do not have this faith, we cannot make proper spiritual advancement. Our whole spiritual life is basically pseudo and superficial. Of course, none of us really have that faith. A neophyte devotee would be very untruthful if he said, I had implicit faith that my guru is my best friend. We have an intellectual understanding. And with that intellectual understanding, we must develop this faith. Yasya devi para bhaktir yatha devi tatha guru. One who has implicit faith in Guru and Krishna, that they are our friends and well-wishers. All the imports of Vedic knowledge is automatically revealed. So therefore, we must very, very carefully cultivate the seed of faith that is within our heart. Therefore, we should never, ever, 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 ever in our life tolerate hearing offenses which are minimizing the position of Krishna or our spiritual master. Because these words have a very, very deep effect on the subtle consciousness and creates havoc to our faith. Even if in our external consciousness we think, oh, I've heard this so many times, it doesn't disturb me. Huh? We may think like that. But we do not understand that we may think we're very advanced externally, but in our hearts we're still neophytes. And these words penetrate through the superficial conception of our own spiritual advancement, that yes, yes, I'm strong and stable enough in my devotional life where I can hear these things, it will not bother me, it will not disturb me, I will go on with my service. But in our subtle stratum of consciousness, havoc is taking place to our faith. Havoc, chaos. And when the real test is there of surrender, at that time we will not be able to perceive with our superficial gross consciousness. Our activities will have to be based on the very, very internal subtle realizations of the heart. That's all we have when the test comes. When Krishna really wants to test us, he smashes, he obliterates our superficial premise of Krishna consciousness. And at that time we realize, my God, my faith is weak. What I have heard is actually disturbing me very much. How will I surrender? Where is my trust? So therefore one must be very, very careful by the order of Krishna to protect his spiritual life, by protecting his faith, by maintaining the trust that Guru is our ever-well-wisher, because Krishna is our ever-well-wisher. Did you ever think of what that means, ever-well-wisher? That means forever. That means he is not only the well-wisher of this life. You may have a mother and a father who are on a very, very gross level of consciousness. They are our well-wisher. But their well-wishing sentiments only survive a few years. At the time that they die, or at the time that we die, they are not any longer our well-wisher. In fact, they will not even recognize who we are. Huh? So we may have well-wishers in this world, but only those great souls who are acting on behalf of God, they are our ever-well-wisher. To God, that I will come back birth after birth after birth after birth in this material world, whatever is necessary till I can deliver this disciple to your lotus feet in the spiritual world. So he is your ever-well-wisher. And if you have that faith, if you have that trust, then and then only can you attain peace. Because then only can you accept that Krishna is the proprietor of everything and trust that, yes, I can give everything to Krishna. It all belongs to him. I will use everything for his enjoyment, because by doing such, that is the ultimate service I can do for all living beings, and that is the ultimate benefit that I can derive in my own heart, in my own life. Sometimes grihasthas, they have their businesses, but they're very afraid of surrender, very afraid of Guru. What if he tells me to do like this? My God, I can surrender to some things, but not that. What if he tells me to do like this? What if this attachment of mine, what if he wants me to do what he wants me to do with it? What if he doesn't want me to do what I want to do with it? It's mine. Ah. If you trust, if you have faith that he is your ever-well-wisher, there will be no anxiety. You will say, whatever, you ask, you tell, take it, do what you want with it. I have faith in you. But if you do not have faith, you're always like this. Up to this borderline, Guru Maharaj, you can give me nice instruction, but don't go beyond the dotted line. Because after that, you're infringing upon what is mine. Very dangerous. That means we don't have faith. That means we don't have trust. Krishna told Arjuna, kill your relatives, kill your grandfather, kill Drona, your teacher. He loved them more dear than his own life. It was a very difficult thing. He was only able to do it because he had complete faith. Sometimes we're tested. But were you ever asked to kill those objects of your love in this world? Huh? You see, when you have this type of faith, when you have this type of trust, you become completely fearless. Because the only fear in life is that we're going to lose something that we're attached to. Huh? If you have faith that Guru is our well-wisher, and that Krishna is our well-wisher, and everything is happening by the direction of Sri Krishna, then what is there to fear? There's nothing to fear. Because you have faith. Whatever Krishna does is for my good. Whatever condition of life comes ultimately, it is for my good, and I have faith. I want something, but Krishna won't give it to me. If I don't trust Krishna, I'll think, Krishna, why can't I have what I want? But if you have faith in Krishna, you will think, ah, Krishna, you are so kind. You are actually giving me just what I need out of your love. So I will accept this, and I will be in peace, and I will be in happiness because I trust you. What to speak of when he takes away what you already have and what's dear to your life? Krishna, why are you taking this away from me? How will I live? If you don't have that trust, you become very disturbed. But if you have that trust with folded hands, Krishna, it's very painful, but it is, let your will be done. That is my faith. Therefore, a devotee, whether he is in life or death, he is nothing more than his faith in Krishna. If you have that faith, you have attained complete peace. And if you have that faith in the spiritual master, who is the representative of Krishna, because after all, you can only love Krishna to the extent you learn how to love your guru. If you love your spiritual master and you have faith and trust in him, then there's no fear of him. That when you have a boil, and you squeeze it, it hurts too much. I'm speaking at the present time from immediate realizations because I have several boils right now. So if you believe me, for those of you who have not have boils, if you even touch it, if you even breathe on it, if someone even looks at it, it's painful. What to speak of when you squeeze it? Too much pain. But what happens if you don't have a boil? If you take any ordinary healthy part of your skin and squeeze it, you can squeeze it as hard as you can, and then nothing. No pain. So when the spiritual master or Krishna squeeze you, if it hurts, it means there is an infection there. It means there's the pus of material attachment inflicting your consciousness. But when the guru squeezes, if it doesn't hurt, no matter how hard he squeezes, we just say, yes, 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 I surrender now. This is the song they sing at New Vrindavan every afternoon, I surrender now. So, I surrender all, that's it, I surrender all. Everyone has to sing that every day, I surrender all. How many people are actually surrendering all? That is the most important thing. So when you surrender all, then let it squeeze, let the pus of our material attachments, let it just flow and flow and flow. But if the guru doesn't squeeze, what happens? Then the infection remains within our heart. So in order for us to allow him to squeeze, we must have faith that he is our well-wisher. When we go to the doctor and he squeezes our infection, we must have trust that he is trying to help us. Otherwise, will we allow him to do it? What do you say, doctors? If a patient doesn't have faith in what you're doing, are they going to allow you to cause pain to them? Huh? They have to have complete faith that he's actually helping me. So therefore, the basic foundation of our spiritual advancement and our peace in life is faith in Guru and faith in Krishna. And we must cultivate and protect that faith by associating with persons who have faith, by hearing from them, and by rendering a service. Through the process of hearing submissively and rendering service, paribrashnena sevaya, this nourishes the seed of faith which is within our heart. And then,
Bhoktaram jagatapasam sarva loka maheshwaram suhridam sarva bhutanam gyatvamam shantimichchati.
We will be very happy, we will be very glad to accept and admit that Krishna is the proprietor of everything. And everything I have and everything else is meant for his enjoyment, and it is my greatest pleasure, it is my greatest purpose of life to simply surrender everything to Krishna. And know that this is the only real happiness that I will ever experience in my life. Thank you very much, Hare Krishna. Yes?
See, amongst such ignorant people who do not know anything, who have no real acquaintance, their blasphemy is hardly even blasphemy. Because they don't know anything about anything. They're just talking. If you can see that you can actually change this person's heart, then you can tolerate to some extent. If you see that he's simply an atheist and he's not listening, then you should not listen to anything he has to say. You should simply say namaste and walk out, Hare Krishna. Give him some prasad and leave. Don't waste your time with such crazy-minded people. But people who actually are envious, who have a personal grudge against Krishna or Guru, and who are trying to blaspheme him on that level, who are motivated, such persons we cannot listen to even for a second. These people are people who do not know anything about anyone. They're just talking craziness. There is a difference between someone who is specifically trying to blaspheme a personality. We should not associate with such persons. We should never hear what they have to say under any condition. But in preaching, these crazy people of the masses, they say what they don't even know what they're saying. So we just say, yes, 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 sir, you are very nice. Just give me this donation and take this prasad. And they say, all right, very nice. We can tolerate that. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.